Welcome to The Odyssey, a podcast by and about Mesa County Libraries. My name is Bethany.
And I'm David.
This segment is brought to you by Mesa County Library Library Cards. No card, no problem. Talk to the staff at any of our 8 locations and they will help you get started. A Mesa County Libraries card is your key to accessing our collection and all of our resources. So come on in and get one today.
Today we are talking with Sam, the Teen Services Librarian at Mesa County Libraries, and we're going to be talking about teens, genre reflecting, all kinds of different things that are going on at the library. Sam, how's it going today?
Pretty good. How are you all doing?
Great. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So at the Central Library at downtown Grand Junction, we have a dedicated teen center. A lot of the branches have dedicated teen centers as well. Sam, you work in there every day. What's your favorite thing about working with teens?
It's really fun. I get to meet a lot of awesome teens. There are all different kinds of teens who use the library. So we see a spectrum of teens from, you know, socioeconomic status to their family situations. We have homeless teens. We have teens who have giant families. We have really just every single kind of person you can think of. And every teen is so unique, too, even if they appear to have similar backgrounds on paper or something. They're all just so incredibly unique.
So is it impossible to lump teens all together? Is that kind of what you're saying? Like teens are actually a diverse group of humans and their own individual
not
thoughts?
Not migratory birds.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, believe it or not. So it seems really stupid and obvious, but it's really easy to fall into the trap of just referring to teens generally and using stereotypes to talk about them. And in some situations, it makes sense to talk about teens in general because to consider each and every person as an individual gets really tricky when you're talking about hundreds or thousands of people.
So if we wanted to dispel the myth of the teen, what's one thing that you wish people knew about them or understood a little bit better about that group?
So the one thing I'll say, it kind of goes back to what you were saying about the migratory birds. They all come at 3 o'clock. So teens are really and truly, they're grown-ups. They are no less capable than grown-ups are in many, many, many ways. But their lives are incredibly regimented and they aren't allowed to do a lot of things. Can a 14-year-old drive? Yes, they certainly can. You know, they have the physical capabilities to do it, but they're not allowed to. Same with if they're 15, they're not allowed. They can't get jobs either if they want to. So we legally relegate them to dependents when they're fully capable of independence. So there's a weird disconnect and a weird sort of tension that they live with in their lives where they feel independent and they feel capable, but all the adults in their lives suggest to them, and our society suggests to them, that they aren't. So I think that that's where there can be frustration between adults and teens sometimes. It can come in from that.
I imagine that's why it's important to have their own space in the library as well. It's a place where people can come and just be themselves.
There's a couple of really important reasons for having a dedicated teen space. And the teen spaces are different at different branches. So like at Central, we have a room with doors that close, which is really handy. So teen spaces do, I'm going to say, 3 different things. The first is having a dedicated space communicates to teens that they're valued and they're important because we're setting aside a significant part of a limited resource just for them to use. So it says that they matter and they have a special place for them. It also gives them freedom from and freedom to do different things. So it gives them freedom from a lot of the scrutiny that they have in their daily lives. When they're in there, they can, you know, play games on a computer and nobody's in there telling them not to or telling them that that's going to break their souls in half if they play that kind of game or whatever. They're free to explore their interests and really do what they want to do. And they're free from a lot of the pressures that they have elsewhere in life. So, and even I think that the immediate thing to think about is freedom from the adults, you know, an adult presence over your shoulder, watching what you read and criticizing you. But they're also free from younger kids, too.
Yeah.
And for a lot of teens with younger siblings, that can be awesome to have some you time with your peers to do something that you like and not worry about taking care of somebody else.
And that's why you'll see those signs in front of the teen areas at most of our locations, I'd say, that have a dedicated teen area. That say, if you're over 18 or under 12. You're welcome to browse, but that space isn't for you to hang out. You have other places in the library that you can hang out, and this is just for teens. So if you see that sign, I always get this question. You are welcome to go in and look at the books in that area, but all the seating, the computers and that stuff, that's for the teens specifically. And I feel like it gives the teens that sense of ownership, and they want to take care of the space because it's their space, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we do. We have a teen advisory board, and they give us input. So it's just a group of 10 volunteer teenagers, and they help us figure out some of the programs and things we want to do to really ensure that teens do have ownership, and they are getting this structured, formal say in what happens to the things that we slap the word teen on.
Yeah.
So it's not just adults with hunches about what the kids are into these days, which is nice. And then one other thing I want to mention about the age restriction is that we don't enforce it, you know, across the board 100%. Like if somebody needs an adult there for medical reasons, or they need an adult there because they have a chaperone in the, with the program that they're in, and they need to have an adult, like we make common sense exceptions for things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are some of the programs that we offer for teens that people maybe just haven't heard of or don't know about?
Yeah, we do. So we do a few different kinds of programs. We do ones that are really sort of entertainment based. And some of the main reasons for those are helping them make connections with other people, with their peers, and also learn how to interact socially in different environments. For some teens, that's just a given that they grow up with. For other teens, that's a really big thing that they learn as they grow up. We also do programs that are more based around academics. So we do test prep things, and we have practice tests for SAT and ACT that are always really popular. We make it as close to an actual test environment as possible. It isn't obviously perfect, but we try to make it as close as we can to give an accurate simulation. And then we also do some job readiness stuff. We have a volunteer program every summer that we do where we have, I think this past year we had about 25 volunteers. It's essentially like a summer job that they don't get paid for.
Yeah, an unpaid internship.
Exactly. It's great. It teaches them a lot of job readiness skills, so they're ready to go and get employment when the time comes. For many teens, it's the very first time that they've had anything that resembles that, where they have to show up somewhere on time and they have to stay focused on a task. They have to work with people that they maybe didn't choose to be around. It's a really great experience for them. And then we also do things like resume help, and we'll help teens with job searching.
I feel like our school district doesn't have enough time with everything else that they're tasked with doing for our kids, that they may not have the time to get into these things like resume and job searching and, you know, just general life experiences. So that's really great that we are supplementing their education and adding those things in. Because that is important. I honestly didn't have any idea how to write a resume, and I wasn't taught in high school. So I think that's really important for kids to learn.
Yeah, I agree. And the school days aren't as long as they are in your memory.
Yeah,
like
right.
School only goes until 2 or 3 o'clock, and it doesn't start super duper early. So there's only so much you can do in school. Yeah, so it's nice that we can offer things like that.
Yeah, only so much we can task our teachers with doing.
Right,
100%.
Yeah. And I think it's amazing like how the library has transformed to offer all these different services. When I was a teen growing up, you wouldn't be caught dead in the library because they didn't do any of this stuff.
Just a bunch of squares.
Just a bunch of squares. Reading squares.
Reading squares.
So, Sam, much like all of our guests, you are a man of many talents.
Too many.
And too many talents to talk about on the show. Along with being the teen services librarian, you've also worked on a book with one of our former podcast guest D. Harold, genre reflecting a guide to popular reading and interests. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, let's do it. What do you want to know?
So, how did you get involved in this project?
All right. So D was working on this project, I want to say back in 2017, thereabouts. And she had some chapters and she was talking about them. And I offered to take a look and proofread one for her. I'm not sure why exactly. I think that there was some kind of reason that made sense. And I did, and she enjoyed working with me and enjoyed the feedback. She's looking for a co-author to help with the workload. So she just asked me if I wanted to help out. It was really one of those things where I was in the right place at the right time. There are a million other qualified people out there who could do it. I was fortunate enough to just be where I was, and it was a great experience.
Cool. What did you learn, either about yourself or about books and different genres, while you were writing Genre Reflecting?
Yeah, there is a lot to learn. There are many books out there.
Just a few.
Yeah, I think that more books get published in a month than most people will ever read in their lifetime, if it's even possible to read as many as get published if you count self-publishing and stuff.
That's true.
It's crazy. There's just so much out there. And so many of the genres run really deep as well. One of the ones that I focused on a lot was mystery. And it's interesting to see some of the trends that happen within genres. So this is adult mystery, or not like adult, but, you know...
Books, mysteries,
or adults. Yeah, for older readers. Adults. It's like a general audience. For a general audience. And so a lot of these mysteries now are trending towards historical fiction, and not super, super old historical fiction like Middle Ages or even 1800s necessarily, but 1920s or 1930s. Who knows the reason why? We can speculate all we want about it, but I think that one of the awesome things about that is you don't have a lot of the digital technology that we have now where you're so immediately connected that it lets authors build more irony into their stories, because it's so easy to miss a connection with somebody when you don't have a cell phone and you can't call them. It's just, there's just so many more situations that can happen that are really exciting and suspenseful.
Cool. So I feel like I ask this question all the time. What is genre reflecting? We should clarify that for people who don't work at libraries.
So the title of the book, what does it mean?
Yeah, like what does that term even mean?
So I honestly don't think it's a term that anybody uses for anything. I think it's a pun on reflecting. It's a portmanteau of genre and reflecting. And I like to think of it as a pun on genuflecting as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But it's really, really what the purpose of the book is, providing a whole bunch. We annotated literally thousands of books in there and categorized them and sorted them into different genres. And readers typically have genres that they gravitate towards. Personally, I read a lot of sci-fi. I read fantasy. I read realistic fiction. I'm going to keep naming genres if I keep going. But
I read everything.
Yeah, we all have things that we like. And this is a way to help readers find books, whether a reader is using the book directly themselves to look it up, or a librarian or bookseller is using it to help them. If you feel stuck with your reading and you want to find a new book but you don't know where to go, it's a really great resource to pick up. You can look up different authors you like and then find people around that author in the same subgenre and just really explore what's out there.
And that's nice, because sometimes I'll go on to Google and I'll say books like, you know, let's say A Court of Thorns and Roses by Sarah J. Maas. Mm-hmm. And some books will come up and I'm like, that has nothing to do with this and I'm not going to read that. And then you get lost and then you don't know what to read.
Totally.
So I need to look at that book.
Yes.
Sam, do you have any more plans to write any more books?
Yeah, I'm working on one right now. The deadline is the 23rd to get it done.
Whoa.
So yeah, it's creeping up, and I've spent a lot of time working on it recently, but it's the teen version of Genre Reflecting.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and it's with a different co-author. So I'm working with Sarah Flowers, who used to be the deputy librarian for the county of Santa Barbara and was the former president of YALSA as well. So she's got like a much cooler resume than I do at this point. But
you're working on it.
But I'm working on it. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, building it up.
And so, YALSA, for people don't know, is...
The Young Adult Library Services Association. Thanks for...
There you go.
Yeah, one of those acronyms that I'm so used to saying, I don't remember that other people don't spend a bunch of time reading about library stuff.
Yeah, in library world, we have just a ton of different acronyms for stuff, so
yeah, we do. And if you like Court of Thorns and Roses, that's one that's in there as well, so when it comes out or some point I can give you recommendations. But
cool.
Yeah,
I'm going to remember that. What advice do you have for people who want to write? whether it be like a genre reflecting type of thing or somebody who just wants to write a story or write their biography?
That's a super good question. And I'll give advice that I don't know if it's very good, but I've never heard other people give it. So there's enough advice out there, I think, on writing. You can find better advice than this. But my advice is to learn Latin.
Yeah. Okay.
That seems like a lot of work, Sam.
Yeah.
It is a lot of work.
Add that to my planner.
Yeah, but it helps. It really helps with grammar and a lot of the smaller fundamentals that once you have those down and you don't have to think about it anymore, it's just so much easier to write. And I think it helps more with technical writing. That's what these books are, really. It's more technical writing than a strong narrative story or something like that. So it helps with that, and it helps with vocabulary. And I don't use a pretentious vocabulary, but it's nice to know what your options are.
That sentence alone was extremely pretentious.
Yeah, I know. Kind of nice.
He's just staring at us like, I know more big words than you do.
I know a bunch of big words.
So go see Sam in the Teen Center if you want to learn Latin and big words.
Yeah. Oh, you know, I actually had my first time, I studied in undergrad, I did Latin and Greek and philosophy for a double major. I graduated and I taught Latin and mythology at a small school for a year.
Wow.
I hated teaching. It's awful. You have to discipline kids and make them do things they don't want to do. So I just don't like it. I know it stinks. But since then, I have had no reason to use Latin or Greek at all, ever. Very surprising, I know. I thought it was going to be this really practical degree that I got. But the other day, we had a patron email us with an inquiry. He had found a book from the mid to late 1700s entirely in Latin. And so he took pictures and emailed the library and said, hey, you all know a lot about books. Can you tell me what this is?
Oh, jeez.
And yeah, it's like an old book on canon law from the Catholic Church. It's not, in my opinion, not super exciting, but it was really fun to use that Latin practically and just feel like, I don't know, I was in...
like your life had value.
Yeah.
No, I felt like Nick Cage in what's the movie with...
National Treasure.
National Treasure, yeah, that's how I felt, yeah.
Well, there you go.
Our resident Nick Cage.
Yeah.
Right there.
That's a great title.
Instead of Teen Services Librarian, resident Nick Cage.
Yeah. I think that's a great note to end on, Sam. Yep. Thanks for coming in.
Sure. Yeah, thanks for having me.
This segment was brought to you by the 970 West Studio. Tap into your creativity at the 970 West Studio. Record a song, film a commercial, or take a picture of your artwork. Talk to a staff member to see how the 970 West Studio can bring your digital projects to life. Today we have Jennifer and Michelle. Jennifer is a librarian at Mesa County Libraries, and Michelle is a library assistant. We are going to be talking about Killers of the Flower Moon by David Gran. David Gran also wrote The Lost City of Z, which was very popular when it came out. Killers of the Flower Moon won the Edgar Award for Best Crime, Fiction, or Best Fact Crime in 2018, the Anthony Award for Best Critical Nonfiction in 2018, and it was the Mesa County Library's Kiva Book Club book recently, and both Jennifer and Michelle trade off with hosting Kiva. So welcome.
Thank you. Thanks, Bethany.
Yeah. First, I wanted to know a little bit about the Kiva Book Club and how you choose your books and how you ended up deciding on this book.
We're very fortunate in that we have quite a few people who come regularly to Kiva. So actually, we just started selecting for next year, and we give them a piece of paper that they can fill out three titles that they're interested in with a brief blurb and the author's name. And then as long as it's something that is attainable for the library to get in paperback, it has to be usually no older than 5 or 6 years, because we don't want things that we have to buy in that won't be well circulated. And it needs to not be super popular. If we have a really long hold list on it, it's very difficult to get those in for the book club.
It's very true. Did a patron recommend this book then? One of the members of the Kiva Book Club, or did someone else?
I think it was a patron. It wasn't me. I know that for sure.
Well, kudos to that patron. It was a really good read.
Yeah, it was a great pick.
Before reading this book for the book club, Had any of you heard or known about any of the events that went on, which we'll get into in a little bit?
I had never heard of this occurring at all, which is only slightly surprising, seeing as how a lot of Indigenous issues are often swept under the rug. But the author did a great job of exposing a lot of really heartbreaking information. It was a tough read. It was a great read, but it was really emotional to get through. I definitely cried.
So did I.
Jennifer and I both discussed. I don't know who outcried who.
I don't know, but I asked everyone in the group if anyone had heard of it, because we've got people ranging from 20 to 70-some in the group, and no one had heard of this. So I think it was really, it's a very important book to read, and we were all just shocked that something of this magnitude could go unnoticed.
Yeah. And I will apologize to start out. I don't know the correct term, if it's Native American or American Indian. They do refer to them as American Indian or Native Americans within the book, so that's what we're going to go with. But I do apologize if that is the incorrect terminology.
From what I've heard, that's the more politically correct terminology.
So we'll go with that one then. This book by David Gran, it is about the Osage or Osage.
That's a good question. I've heard it both ways, okay. But I think in the documentaries, it's Osage.
Osage.
I always say Osage, which is too. Probably
me
very
too.
Incorrect.
It's okay. The Michigan long A's that make me do it.
So it's about the Osage or Osage Nation in Oklahoma, a community of Native Americans that were uprooted from their homelands and had to move. They moved to Oklahoma, and oil was discovered in their land. But because they had bought the land from the tribe that was there before, I can't remember.
From the government.
Oh, for the government.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The government actually placed them there because it was such like horrible, rocky, unmanageable turf that they figured no white man or no other people would want to encroach on that. So they put them in this seemingly like a wasteland of a place, thinking that they would just be settled there.
Stuck there.
Stuck there.
Little did they know, right?
Except the Indians did, because they knew about the mineral rights, and they wrote that into their agreement, that anything underneath was theirs as well. What did they call it? The underground reservation, I think they kept calling it.
Okay. So oil was discovered on that land, and that was a hot commodity back then, and still is to this day. So if anyone wanted to drill in that area, they had to buy leasing rights?
Head rights.
Head rights. Mm-hmm. That's right. Which went for a fortune. So this group of Osage Native Americans were set up for a lot of money with that, and it caused a lot of problems.
Yeah, they were the richest people in per capita in the world between 1920 in 1924.
That's like crazy.
Wearing furs, they had 20 cars, throwing crazy parties.
They had drivers.
Yeah.
And they had white maids.
That's true. Yes.
Yeah. More power to them.
Yeah.
Not what we expect, and what people,
it's not.
People, when they saw the picture in the book, were absolutely stunned, because nobody's heard about this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to start, how the book kind of starts out, we'll just give a little bit of a general timeline. There was a murder, actually two murders of Osage individuals that went unsolved for quite a long time, and multiple killings followed after that of individuals of this group. And it's about how a group of, I guess you could call them like West lawmen, maybe. There wasn't really an organized law group back then, at least federally. How they came in and how the FBI and J. Edgar Hoover were tasked with finding the killers of this group of people.
Yeah. Tom White was the one that spearheaded the investigation, and he was like the super smooth, easygoing cowboy type of investigator, and he basically saved a lot of people. Not even basically, he saved a lot of people. Yeah. fought really hard for them, for justice.
Yeah. Back in a time when there were no cell phones or internet history to check, mm-hmm. or video cameras to check, they had to do insane groundwork to find these people and find out what happened to this group, which I thought was just fascinating and enlightening.
Yeah, you can like email a correspondent and say, guess what I found out, Bob? It was like days by horseback of trying to, you know, connect the dots.
Yes.
He also had employed in his group one of the first Native American member of the FBI who mm-hmm. posed as an undercover medicine man to infiltrate within the tribe and amongst the people.
Yeah, that was cool. That was cool to read about. And he kind of did his own thing most of the time, and they let him because, you know, that was what helped them.
He knew people. So he got the people that he needed in the positions that they needed mm-hmm. in order to get them infiltrated into the Osage community. Mm-hmm. And from there, it was amazing what happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. There were 24 people murdered in that 4-year period.
I still find it crazy that never had heard about, the three of us had never have heard of this before. And I'm sure many people haven't either.
If this was a rich, normalized society, high society in New York, everyone would have heard about it. But
crazy.
It got swept under the rug.
Good on David Grand for writing that, right?
Yeah, buddy. Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
What message did you take away from the book after reading it that you found very important?
Well, first off, I think everybody needed to be aware of this. It's very hard to read this and realize that our government was so underhanded in their dealings with people and that they promised several times to help these people and it didn't turn out that way. It also was really amazing and wonderful to see how these people cared for one another as a unit. I mean, as a community, as families, and being determined for Tom White and the group, being determined to get to the truth no matter what it cost. Mm-hmm. Some of the people were poisoned, and they kept saying it was a wasting disease. Then it turned out later that some of the doctors were implicit in it and were giving medicine to people in order to poison people. It was a really corrupt time and community, and for the people to work so hard to bring it to light, that was fabulous.
Yes. Yeah, at one point, I think they also said that the mom and then one of the main players had diabetes, and so mm-hmm. they were giving them insulin, and it turns out that was probably poison. So very underhanded.
Greed is a powerful drug.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. What else did you take from the book that you think people who haven't read the book yet that should read the book or that want to read the book, what do you think is important?
Well, I think it's important, first of all, that you have to appreciate true crime novels, because this is right in the thick of that. But it kind of taught me to not only appreciate the past, but learn from it. This is still a really relevant issue today. A lot of issues in the indigenous, society, a lot of people going missing, no official reports being filed. So it's just taught me a lot about a problem that's still occurring, I suppose, mm-hmm. how it happened way back when, but it's still a modern issue.
Anything, Jennifer?
I'm just listening. It was such a touching book because it was so frightening to feel that we could know nothing about this and that the people were really very marginalized. People didn't care. And until they started doing their own investigation, these numbers didn't matter and they didn't seem to add up to anything. And beyond the 24, they said there were many more. Probably William Hale, who was the perpetrator of all this, he started this, they think, many years before that. It's just that then they started happening so frequently that you couldn't ignore that the community was being decimated.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He planned this from the second he got into this community. He mm-hmm. was planning all of the murders, and he had his nephew marry into the richest family. That was all on purpose. Mm-hmm. It was all a big scheme.
And it's very it was really sad because they were talking about at the beginning how the love between the nephew and Anna, who is one of the main characters and one of the main players in the story, how everyone thought it was so real and so genuine. And then it comes to the end and you realize you were fooled. So how could she not have been fooled? And how could others not have been fooled?
Right. And David Grant is excellent.
Oh, he's great at it.
Keeping you on the edge of your seat and then springing a big surprise on you.
Yes. Another fun fact about this book is that apparently it's going to be a movie.
Yes. Yes.
Which I think is really cool.
It'll be amazing.
I Googled this a little thoroughly. Leonardo DiCaprio, he's going to be the good guy. He's the cowboy Tom White.
Awesome.
And Robert De Niro with his charming snarl is going to be the villain, which I think William Hale, which is going to be a great part for him.
That'll be so good. That would be cool to do a library showing. Maybe it'll be on Canopy.
That would be really good to do.
That would be cool.
Now we're talking.
Yeah.
Then invite people to read the book afterwards.
Yeah. And then we could do a discussion on if they did a good job, which I'm sure they will.
Did we just formulate a party?
Yes. Dave's in charge of planning since he didn't read the book.
You got it. I will definitely plan a party. Theme party at that.
Well, it was also interesting because the subtitle of the book is The Osage Murders and the Birth of the FBI. Mm. So it was talking all about how J. Edgar Hoover got his start. And it sounded like he started as a pretty earnest young man. But by the end, he was kind of not very nice. And even with Tom, who spent all these years working with him and doing this investigation and finding things out, at the end, Tom wanted just some information to write a book. And he was denied any information. And when he was not well, someone else suggested, maybe you should send him a card or something. But he didn't think of that on his own. And I'm thinking, this man spent years of his life, and he was targeted. I mean, anyone who was working that time against the Osage Indians or for the Indians was targeted, and he and his family could have been in real danger and probably were. But J. Edgar Hoover really did not have his back.
He sounded very selfish.
Yeah. One redeeming quality of his that I want to mention, which I did bookmark in the book, was that he was a clerk. J. Edgar Hoover was a clerk at the Library of Congress. And he took the Dewey Decimal System and used that to inform how he organized files in the FBI of crimes and reports from his agents, which I just thought was really interesting.
Tactical.
So he was a smart man.
Yes. But not a very nice guy.
No. Smart and organized. Yes.
But not nice.
Before we sign off with you two, if somebody's interested in the Kiva Book Club, what's the best way to get involved in that?
They can call the library at 243-4442. And they could ask for Jennifer or Michelle, or actually anyone else with information services. Kiva Book Club meets the third Thursday of the month at 6:30 in the evening at the Central Library. We'd love to have people come.
There's hot tea and good conversation.
Absolutely.
Ooh, that's a good slogan. I like that. You can also go on our catalog, and you can either search for Killers of the Flower Moon or by author David Gran if you're interested in checking it out. See if we have it available or put it on hold if it's not and have it sent to one of the library locations.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you guys.
Thank you. This podcast is recorded at the 970 West Studio at the Central Library in downtown Grand Junction. Subscribe to the podcast and follow us on social media for library updates. For more information about the library, visit mesacountylibraries.org.